Here we go again. Temperatures will plunge well below zero overnight tonight, and some of us will once again find ourselves dealing with frozen pipes. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. We'll start off the hour talking about frozen pipes, how to respond when it happens to you, and how to prevent them in the future. There are a number of different solutions sold at your local hardware store. We'll find out what works. We'll also talk about dealing with the aftermath of a wintertime flood in your basement or crawl space. And, of course, Bill will answer your questions about the projects on your to-do list. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's time for Polar Vortex Part 3, or maybe Polar Vortex Part 4. And the cold this winter has taken a toll on many homes. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. And a lot of people have had to deal with frozen pipes this year.
Yes, they have. Yeah, mostly people in this northern part of the country have. It's strange to see this much, though, seeing so many streets tore up, seeing many streets with about 6 to 12 inches of water running across them. And it's just a nightmare.
Well, I have read that for many municipalities, this is the worst it's been in 35 years.
Yeah, it is. And the farther north you go, I was just recently up in Minnesota and up around Duluth and that. They have, you know, frost level down to 7 and 8 feet up there. So they're really struggling right now.
All right. So most of us know this by now because this winter has been so long and so very
it's
difficult.
Fairly obvious, yeah.
But when do the temperatures get low enough that we need to start worrying? I mean, every home is different, but
yeah, every home is different. But you know, if you've had issues in the past, you should be, first of all, during the good weather, getting rid of those issues and trying to fix it so that you're prepped for the oncoming cold season. But you know, it seems to strike. Mostly homes that are older, we used to do like say 42 inches seemed to be like deep enough to go back in the olden days, like when I was building. Yeah. But now, you know, they try to get water lines down to 5 and 6 feet on the new construction. So you very rarely see it on new construction where their water lines are freezing. But one thing that's, you know, in all the articles and all the stuff on the internet you read, it seems like nobody brings up the issue of what happens when you do landscaping. You know, the water lines come in at a certain depth, and they may bring them in at 5 or 6 feet. Well, if somebody does some creative landscaping, you may end up excavating a couple feet off above where your water line comes in. And so then, you know, that could cause an issue.
Less insulation.
It is. But, you know, we've gotten away from a lot of crawl spaces, uninsulated ones especially. They seem to be a real, you know.
Not at my house, but at other houses.
Well, yeah, you know, I can still remember when my wife's grandma had me go thaw out lines every winter. I'd crawl in the crawl space, barely get in there. And, you know, of course, I had to fend off the possums every year, you know, poking sticks at them. So I'd have to trap possums before I could even, you know, thaw our lines out. But you know, with the new construction methods, you very seldom see water lines in outside walls where there's less insulation. So if you have an older home, you know, you'd better be just a little bit more aware of what's going on.
Right. Well, okay. If you have an older home, and again, a lot of people have been through this already this winter, but first sign is pretty clear when you turn on the tap and the water's not running.
It is. And some people will notice maybe a little bit discoloration in the water, that it just smells a little bit different or it's colored a little bit different. And so you're kind of catching it right as it starts to begin to freeze. And, you know, if you think you're going to have an issue, start running a faucet, leaving it trickle. You know, some will say to let it run, you know, just drip. But most of the time, if you talk to any municipalities, they like to have the water running about the size of a pencil. That's kind of the going amount. And to me, that seems like a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it just comes back to, too, as if, you know, at certain times, say at night when people aren't running a lot of water is okay, now the water mains don't have a whole lot of water going through them. It causes more issues with freezing as well. You know, especially older homes, we tended to put water lines and, you know, maybe an outside walls where the kitchens were in the sink. So open your cabinet doors to like any vanities or kitchen cabinets in the kitchen sinks, especially if they're on outside walls. Even if it's an outside wall to a garage, you have to remember that, you know, the garage is really – really outside, even though it's kind of, you know, not, but it still is a lot of times temperature wise. So, you know, open those up and, you know, do some record keeping. See if maybe you had somebody come in and work on the house, maybe ran security lines or something like that. I had a home a long time ago. Their water lines kept freezing up. And it was because a security person came in and pulled the insulation out of the wall so he could run his lines down. Well, it happened to be the same one where the water lines were. So every year his vanities would freeze up. Yeah. You know, but you just need to be aware of maintenance on your home and making sure that, you know, if you remember in the past if they ever froze. And if you purchase a home, that's a really good question to ask. I don't think that's ever on, you know, any kind of paperwork. Did your water freeze last year? You know, ask the homeowners, do you ever have a problem when it gets really cold?
Now, there are solutions that, you know, you talked about thawing out lines. If you catch it quickly, is that a good idea?
Yeah, you want to thaw those out as fast as you can. What you do is if you notice that the water isn't running, you can kind of track down sometimes, well, maybe it's this water line or that one, maybe it's going to this sink. So open that faucet up so that, you know, even though there's no water coming out, open that up and then start thawing the water lines out from that point going backwards to where the main comes in. Now, the different ways of thawing out, you know, there's – you know, a lot of people tend to maybe grab a torch. That's like one of the big no-nos because you can start a fire so easy. And a lot of times, especially in an older home, you may have a little ember and it may take hours for it to take off. So really shy away from a torch. I know it's fast and sometimes it's kind of fun to hurry up and thaw it out. But gravitate more towards a heat gun. It's kind of a glorified hair dryer. You can pick them up at any hardware stores and that. They'll have different temperature settings. And, you know, just flat out ask, hey, okay, I'm going to be working on water lines. You know, which one should I, you know, which setting should I have it on? And never put it up against the water line. Because what can happen is let's just say that there gets to be enough pressure that it does spring a leak. All of a sudden you've got this electric, you know, appliance in your hand and then all of a sudden you've got water. Well, you know, it's there could be a chance of electrocution. So stay away from it. You can usually tell. When you're thawing out, what you'll see is frost on the line, on the pipe. You'll see this real heavy frost. And you can see as you take the heat gun across it, you'll be melting it. And what you're trying to do is as the water melts, then it kind of heads towards the faucet. Because if you go the other way, you can cause more pressure and actually cause it to burst. You may want to as well shut the main off at the house because if you do open it, let's say if you're by yourself, you should always have two people there, but shut the main off so there's no water coming in. If you do get a, you know, the pipe does break, it's just going to be whatever's in that water line.
Right, so keep the flood under control.
Yeah, everybody should know where the water line comes into your home, where that water – usually, you know, there's a water meter there. It's kind of a brass-colored unit, maybe about a foot long. Make sure that operates because, you know, when you want to shut the water line, it's not the time to, oh, hey, this thing is all jammed. You know, if you can't get it to work, you know, make sure a plumber has that fixed for you so that you can effectively shut that off. And I like to see a lot of shutoffs in water lines. So you can basically zone every, you know, every toilet, every sink, you know, so that you can cut smaller areas down and it kind of lessens the chance of catastrophic failure.
All right. So let's say you don't get them thawed out in time
right.
And you do have pipes burst, which
yes.
happens. I'm sure a lot of plumbers have had a lot of work this
yes,
winter.
Yes, they have, yeah.
Because of that. Now, once you get through all of the plumbing work, or even before you do, I mean, there are options about as far as replacing your pipes with things that are more plastic or more rubber so they can take a little more of the give and take. What's your suggestion?
Well, you know, the best thing is just to get the house tightened up so that you don't have that issue. So, like, if you have water lines that are in a crawl space and there's vented crawl space, so cold air goes in there in the winter, plug that off in the winter. There's no need to have a vented crawl space in Iowa in the winter, especially. You want to make sure that cold air doesn't travel across it. So, like, just people will think, okay, I can just go get some insulation, get some fiberglass insulation. Fiberglass insulation doesn't work unless it's trapped, you know, basically air trapped. So if you're going to insulate pipe, use rubber pipe insulation and try to stop any air that can maybe come in from the outside of a house and travel through the fiberglass and get to a water line. We see cases where water lines will be 10 foot inside of a house and they'll freeze because the air is blowing through the fiberglass insulation and then it freezes that pipe, which you think there's no way. So you just want to stop any air, cold air getting across it, insulate the pipe, and then when it does, in the water, you can get a thermometer, run the water for 5 to 10 minutes, put the thermometer in the water, and if it's below 40 degrees, then just go ahead and start running that drip.
All right. Now, let's say you're in a much older home, and getting that space insulated is a lot more challenging. What are some of the other possibilities? If you go to the hardware store, this winter going to the hardware store, everything was sold out, all of the different heat tape and elements that you can wrap around the pipes. What works? What's dangerous?
Well, heat tapes, you see a lot of articles on, wrap your pipes with heat tapes. If you're going to do that, I would get with your insurance company first because a good heat tape costs a lot of money. And there are a lot of, budget heat tapes. And this is something that you do not want to scrimp on. In fact, we used to use those in the past. We've put them in gutters, big commercial ones and that. And I've never been that impressed with them anyway. But when it comes down to possibly having an issue with especially with your insurance company, I would ask them first, hey, is it okay if I can use those? Is it okay with our particular policy? But you just need to get in there and insulate those pipes. And if you're going to change anything out, there are some plumbers that like, say CPVC pipe, the plastic pipe, the white plastic pipe. They like that a little bit better because it expands a little bit more. But the problem is when that water starts to freeze, it exerts about 2,000 pounds per square inch, roughly, and any pipe isn't going to be able to take that kind of pressure. And the hard thing is if you have pipes that are maybe going into some areas that you can't get to easily, maybe it's like you're saying, let's think about this and maybe let's reroute this pipe so it comes through an area that's warmer all of the time. Let's do that in the spring or fall when it's not so hot down in there. But let's reroute some things when the weather's decent. And you may have to do that when you do have a frozen pipe because if they're inside the walls, you're going to have to open the walls up and fix them anyway. So let's get them out of there.
A lot of people have had repeat problems this winter because it's impossible to get that all taken care of in the winter months. But hopefully we'll be better prepared for another.
Yeah, and the other thing is we've, where the snow is, there's not that much frost. Where the concrete is, driveways and that, there's a lot of frost.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, and he is ready to answer your questions. You can ask questions about frozen pipes or water problems or any of the problems you're experiencing around the house or projects on your to-do list. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here with us today, and he's ready to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Nikki is on the line first in Dubuque. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Good. What's your question?
Good. I've got a question this morning about pipes, and mine are not frozen, but I'm still having an issue with them. I have an older two-story home, and the bathroom upstairs, the tub and the sink are right next to each other, but it's really strange. For some reason, I have really hot water in my sink and not always so much in the tub, and it doesn't make sense to me because it seems like the hot water should be getting to both of them at the same time, and so I thought maybe Bill would have some ideas as to why that was.
Is it old plumbing?
Yeah, I think it is. Yep.
Are you in the country or in town?
In town.
You may have, what happens sometimes is there's when the water kind of mixes all together and all these different valves and such. You might have a whole lot of buildup inside the pipe, so you're just not getting enough water hot water over, even, you know, when, even when you have the hot water on itself, is it hot or is it still kind of parched?
No, it's hot, yeah.
But you're just not getting much of it, are you?
Yeah, and it's inconsistent. I mean, there's some days, you know, there's some days where it's fine, and then there's other days where it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to get in the shower. It's so cold.
Yeah, that you may want to have those water lines replaced.
Okay.
And while you're doing that, you know, replace the faucets, because you can get, if you really like, you know, say if it's an older home and you like the period look, you know, you can still get the faucets even in low flow so that you can, you know, save some water. Okay. You can get the low flow, still the period look, and have your plumber replace them. And then be sure and put in some, you know, and he probably will ask you, you know, put in some extra shutoffs where it's where you can get access to them. So if he ever has to work on it again, that he doesn't have to shut the whole bathroom down.
Well, a lot of sinks and bathtubs or showers actually have separate lines.
Yeah, they do. They do. And so, you know, it. You know, if you're going to replace them all, but they do have separate lines, yeah, because like Charity said, it just depends on what kind of faucets and that you have.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that helps.
You bet, thanks.
All right, Nikki, thanks a lot for your call. Good luck.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Neil on the line. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
We have a kitchen that was built 20-plus years ago over an existing concrete patio. And essentially, 2x8 floor joists were just laid on top of the patio, and then we built the kitchen on top of there. So there's no crawl space, no way to get in there, and a great big heat and cold sink.
Yes.
We filled it full of bad insulation, ran the drain and supply pipes right up to the bad insulation, and we got along just great for all these years until that really cold blast hit about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
At which time we froze and burst one of the lines where it comes up basically on the west side of the house up into the kitchen sink. You know, there was a spot there that was just a little too close to the cold wall, and it froze.
Right.
By the time we figured it out, we've got fiberglass mat insulation that is wet for essentially, I'm guessing anyway, the whole 10x12 kitchen area.
Okay.
Talk to a contractor. He thinks we can go on the outside, take the siding off for two or three courses up, split the ledger board, and just hook this all out. But then the question is what to put back in there for insulation.
Well, what you'd probably want to do is – The other problem we have is now that concrete's, you know, built 20 years ago, it's probably not an insulated slab. And the floor joists, if they're sitting right down on top of the concrete, I doubt if they were treated floor joists. So you may have even a bigger issue of now your flooring, your floor joists are wet. They've taken on enough moisture because the temperature of the concrete and the soil below it. So, you know, that's a good idea where he's talking about, you know, cutting out that rim and so pulling the insulation out. But now you're going to have to also get some air movement back in there and make sure that moisture content is down, say, you know, 10 to 15% moisture on your wood before you close that back up. Now, there's two ways to re-insulate that. You can spray a foam, like a closed-cell foam, but it's hard to sometimes get that in there and not have it expand too much. You got to have a really good installer that understands when you can do it. And it has to be 50-degree temperature before you spray that product anyway, so it's, you know, right now it's kind of tough. Or just use foam board, so you can cut the foam board into, say, probably your spacing is 16 inches on center, so you'd cut them roughly 14 and a half inches wide and shove those in from the end in multiple layers. It's still really hard to do a good job when it's, you know, you can't actually, you know, get in there and push things to where you want. The thing is, we want to make sure and keep that plumbing on the warm side, and you said that perfectly, you know, about you've had the plumbing up against that cold wall, and even when you have fiberglass in there, it doesn't really help the plumbing all that much if there's any air movement. So, you know, if you pull the siding off up a ways and put foam insulation in, maybe reroute your plumbing to put it right up against the floor instead of down closer to the concrete, it'll help stay keep it warmer. Or if there's any way you can reroute that maybe through the back of the cabinets and keep them you know, warmer. That's without seeing it, I don't really know for sure. But you're still going to have to really dry that system out. That's always been kind of a pet peeve for me. That's always been really scary when I used to do the same thing, exactly what you've got, is we take a patio. And that's why a lot of building codes will not allow you to do that anymore. You can't put like a living space attached to your house on a concrete slab unless it has footings or, say, foam that goes 4 feet out away from it horizontally so the frost can't get underneath it and lift it. So because they've seen issues exactly like what you have. That was kind of long and drawn out, I know, but he's going to have to really dry that out before you can fill it back in. It has to be a dry heat. You can't bring, like, say, a kerosene or propane heater and start throwing heat inside there to dry it out because it'll just make it wetter. So it's going to be like electric heat.
Well, I'm sure that was scary, Neil. Does that answer your question?
Mostly it does. We planned on doing this in April. And,
okay.
Yeah, we're going to put a fan in there, a green type aeration fan, and let it run for a couple of weeks to get the thing dried out well.
Yeah.
My question is, there's a product I've looked at called Porfoam.
Okay.
The company or the contractor has to come and look at it, and we'll evaluate at that time. But my understanding is this is a product that you pour it into this, and then it self-levels and then rises, as opposed to the more injected type foam. And that's kind of what I'm looking at. Just wondered if you had any experience with that product.
I would I'm hoping it's not a product that I have in the back of my mind. I would do a lot of research on that particular product. And if its ability to completely fill the cavity, not just vertically but horizontally, because there's a few foam products out there that do about the same thing as what you're saying, and they're not a good product at all. So do your research and get a lot of information on it from, say, Oak Ridge National Labs or the Department of Energy. You need a strong third-party discussion on that particular type of a product. There are what town are you in?
The St. Ansgar area, clear up in northern Iowa.
Okay. There are some really good foam installers up that way. But you really need to do your research on that, because there's quite a few products out there that are kind of giving the wrong the wrong impression to a lot of people on performance, because they're being put in wrong, and it's not the product, it's the installers. There's so many people getting into the product and not being trained enough. So I do a lot of research on that before I would go with the one that I think you're talking about.
Okay,
all right,
Neil.
Okay, you bet.
Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Sharon in Iowa City. Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, about 5 years ago, we redid our kitchen, and it was built over. It was a garage before we bought the house. Okay, and it was already converted into a kitchen when we bought the house in the 70s. Okay, so we redid it. I made the mistake of not. It's built over a crawl space.
Okay.
I made the mistake of not putting radiant heat in the floor.
Okay.
And the floor is a tile floor, and let me tell you, in the wintertime, you go in there and it is cold in that floor. There's only one heat register that goes to it, and I cannot take up the flooring and do it now, because this was a flooring that had to be put on first and then the cupboard set.
Okay.
So can I insulate that crawl space to warm it up? Should I put some, like, baseboard heating in there to heat the floor area? You know, what are my options?
Well, yeah, you could. The best thing to do would be to insulate the crawl space. What you'd want to do is put insulation on the side walls. How deep is that? Have you been down in there or looked in there?
No, I've never been down in there. I don't think anybody since we've owned the house has been down in there.
Okay. Well, hopefully.
It has just this little tiny hole into the basement. So, okay. I mean, I could look, but I don't think it's very big.
Okay. Yeah. And I bet it, that hole then is probably the size of what the old garage or the window was going out from the house before. So it's probably 16 inches by 32 inches. So you'll need a little wrestler, first of all. to crawl back in there. But, yeah, the best thing to do, especially for the house as well, is to insulate that crawl space. And you would want to put at least 2 inches of foam board on the side walls and then continue that all the way up in between where the floor joists are so that, you know, that's the minimum. You should, you know, what part of the state are you in?
Iowa City.
Okay, yeah, you know, you put probably 2 to 3 inches of foam, and there are a lot of contractors in the Iowa City area that are good at insulating crawl spaces, and then you would also want to make sure that you have a good plastic vapor barrier across the if that was a garage floor across that whole floor, and it what you want to ask for is you want a 10 to 15 mil. M-I-L. You want a really thick plastic over that. And it's not going to hurt at all that once the sides are all insulated to go ahead and insulate the floor as well with foam.
Yeah, because, you know, it's so cold and I know there's places that it leaks.
You'll be so amazed that once you heat that up, and especially if it's open to the basement through that window, it'll be so much warmer. And if you have a heating and cooling person, you know, they can run a small heat run into that area once it's all insulated. It's going to be probably just as good or better than your basement as far as insulation, and then it'll be a lot warmer.
All right, Sharon, thank you so much for your call. Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, is here with us today, and you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ralph is up next in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi.
Hi.
So what was three things? What was the name of that research lab you talked about again?
Oak Ridge National Laboratories.
You can do that online, possibly.
Yeah. I tell you what, if you go there or Green Building Advisor.
All right.
And Fine Home Building, they all have really good research articles, and then they have a lot of experience type articles of what, you know, people run into certain things. And because I love foams, I really love foams, and I just hate it when they're put in wrong. It's like anything else, you know, any type of insulation, if it's put in wrong, you know, isn't going to work. So I just want to make sure that, you know, that they're put in correctly. But Oak Ridge National Labs has done a lot of research along with the Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation. You would think it was just a big bunch of bankers, but I swear they even test toothpicks up there. Canadians, I guess, have nothing better to do than test things. I like Canadians, Jerry. Don't look at me like that, but I'm just saying, these guys test everything.
Would you put 2-inch white foam sheets inside the house and the upstairs windows and tape it up good so you don't get any heat loss out?
Well, yeah,
that,
I always
that help much, including I already got the 3M products on the windows.
Okay, I always use extruded foam, like the colored type foams, like Dow.
You don't like the other stuff very good.
Yeah, I don't like really care for the white. And some of the expanded foams, they take on a little bit of moisture, but I very seldom will put them in a window. We only use those for, like, say, foundations and sheeting on the outside.
I've already got the white foam. And
I guess you'll use that one.
I priced the sheet of that pink stuff, and it was around $40 for a sheet.
Wow. Because it's like, if you catch them on sale, they're about $11 to $12 for 1 inch and double that for two. So, because I keep up on that market a lot because I tend to buy some whenever the price is low.
So you're saying the pink stuff is much, much better than the white?
I tend to think it is, yes. And it has a higher R value, but it also it doesn't take on any moisture.
So would you put a milk house heater in the basement under the kitchen so that your pipes that are almost up against the walls would not freeze?
You know, that might help. you know, it may help in your case. You just want to get some, at least if you get like a milk house, you know, at least they, you know, have move a little air as well.
Right.
So generally those aren't too bad, but you know, you just got to make sure and keep it away from anything flammable because,
right.
Yeah, they are, sometimes they're a little bit scary, but I feel fairly safe with milk houses.
2 feet away from the possible burning type stuff is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, keep your eye on it. But if you can somehow, you know, maybe divert air from inside the house with a fan and maybe some duct work in some cases.
I put a bigger exit for the heat run or whatever you want to call it out of the furnace, so I was getting more heat in the basement because it was awful small. And the guy that put the furnace in says, well, you need to make a bigger one down there so you get more heat in the basement, and because it was running like 38 degrees that last time. It was colder than the backside of a well digger's.
Yeah. Is there any way you can insulate the basement to help out a little? Or?
It's right by a old window, and since the ground's froze, I just built a box and I stuffed it full of fine sawdust. Try it. That's not much, but it's better than the sharp stick in the eye, right?
Yep.
Well, we need to take a short break. Ralph, thank you so much for your call today.
Thanks.
Ralph and Grinnell, and we'll be back to answer more questions with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, here in just a moment. You can get on the line at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today preparing us for the next big cold spell, which starts now. And you can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John is up next in Okoboji. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, this goes back to letting your water run if you're afraid it's going to freeze up.
Yeah.
And what I'm thinking of doing is actually building a little device that would be set on a timer that would actually allow the water to run, let's say, once every hour and a half for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, something like that.
Sure.
Basically to actually keep from consuming so much water, of course.
See, now, smart guys like you embarrass people like me. I'm challenged enough just to return the faucet on. Now, here you're talking timers, you know. that's the smartest thing to do. And I know they sell them. That's by far the best way to do it. That's pretty neat. What do you, you know, how you get, and that's that with your iPhone, too, can't you?
Well, I'm not quite that smart. So more of a mechanical type
Okay.
Deal.
That's a good idea, though. Yeah, yeah. I like that.
What would be your recommendation on running? You know, would you run? You know, I think that the timer I'm going to use, I think I can cut it down to half hour increments.
Yeah,
so,
I think.
You know, I could shut it off for 2 hours and let it run a half hour, or you know, 1 hour for a half hour or something like that. If you were going to make a recommendation, what would you say?
I don't know. I think I'd run it as often as I could. So, yeah, get it down to, you know, I think I'd just run it as often as I could, you know, even if it just ran for a few minutes. Like you say, if it was if the smallest increment's a half hour, you know, have that run every couple hours. I think that's just me. But I really don't know any research or anything on it. But that makes a lot of sense to me. But then again, it kind of depends on the house, so too, because something could freeze up pretty fast.
Well, you know, you've got a lot of variables per house, of course, too. You know,
yeah,
you know,
there
how,
is.
You know, how cold is it down there, and so forth and so on. So.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm going to try it, but I thought maybe you might have some input on it.
No, that's a pretty neat idea, though. I like that.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get a couple of email questions answered here. This is from Kate. We have a drain in the driveway outdoors that is not currently draining. The roof, gutters, and driveway flow into this drain. When we had a thawing last week, it became apparent that the drain was not working. Water was standing in it, so we bailed it out as much as possible. The sewer service was too busy to get to our house last week. Now the drain is frozen and full of ice. We're worried. Will it be okay till it thaws again? And we have the sewer service come out to ream it out, or is there another solution? We've lived here 20 years and never had this problem.
Yeah, you know, most of the time those will freeze up anyway. I guess you're pretty lucky that it hasn't frozen a lot in the past. That's why when people will attach directly, say, to a drain system like you have, they will put a diverter, say, maybe a foot or 2 feet up from the ground, that when it does freeze in the ground, that it will divert the water during a thaw over the top of the soil and, you know, just be like everybody else's house then, because it is a little bit scary when it does freeze in those lines. And then what it'll do is it'll just keep backing right up, and it's going to split all your downspouts. It could possibly split your gutters, and then not to mention the weight of the downspouts being completely full of ice. So have a gutter person or yourself put a diverter so that you can get the water to run away when it thaws and not going down in. And you're just going to have to, you know, let Mother Nature take its course on the rest of that floor drain. And when the water – and it's kind of funny. When water keeps running, even when it – you know, let's say water right out of the ground. We have some up in northern Minnesota when I was up there this weekend that's coming. It's a free-flowing well. That – where that well is, it's about 100 feet away from where it comes out of the ground, and there's no snow at all. The water's running across, and there's no frost just because that water is just warm enough to keep it, you know, moving. So most of the time, you probably had enough water running through there to keep it open, but you're just going to have to let Mother Nature. I don't even know if I would have – I don't think I would even bother having somebody come out and auger that out, because it's probably just going to do it again, you know, before, you know, the end of March or so, or beginning of April.
All right. Next up, we've got a question from Cheryl. We did a short-term activated charcoal radon test in our basement in January of 2013. The result was 6.4. We did another short-term test in March 2013. The result was 5. Then we did a long-term test in a level of our home that's partially below ground, and that result was 4.3. The report states that the EPA recommends action taken at 4.0 or higher. What do you think they should do?
If that's not an area that you have active bedrooms down there and you're spending a lot of time, those are pretty low levels, especially for Iowa, which has the highest average in the country. Those are really low levels, and in some parts of the world they don't even worry unless it's higher than 12. So I would just keep testing, stay right on top of it, and remember, winter is always the higher numbers are always in the winter, and so unless you're down there all the time. I wouldn't worry about it. I'd just keep monitoring. And if you are nervous about it, put in a radon mitigation system. And the nice thing about that we found out is if you have a, you know, basement area that's kind of damp, that these radon systems actually depressurize the area underneath and around your basement, and it drops the relative humidity in the basement, and the water takes the water vapor from around the soil around the basement, and you end up having a lot drier basement. You may not have to run your dehumidifier.
So, all right.
There's a lot of pluses to that system.
Let's get back to the phones. Chris is on the line from Davenport. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
My question is, I have an older home over a crawl space, and there's probably 30 inches of clearance to the dirt, which has a heavy mill on it. But my question is, around the rim joist, I noticed there's nothing no insulation around the perimeter on the three sides, but what they had done was stuff loose fiberglass bats in the floor joists, but nonetheless, it's still a cold addition.
Sure, sure. Pull the fiberglass out. It's not vented, is it?
Right? No.
Okay. Pull the fiberglass out between the floor joists. Pull those out and put about 4 inches of foam, cut pieces of foam. Cut them to fit, and then caulk on the last one, and then caulk all the way around it so no air can get around the foam and get between the foam and the rim or band joist area there to cause any condensation. And then continue the foam across the top of that sill plate, and then be sure and caulk where the sill plate sits on top of the foundation. It's amazing how much air gets between that sill plate and that top of that foundation, because that sill sealer, we always thought it did a great job. It really is kind of decorative, pretty much cosmetic anymore. You need to really seal that area and then insulate the sidewalls. But yeah, we used to put fiberglass in those, bay areas all the time. And when it gets real cold, if you've got a moist area, sometimes a moist crawl space, it's kind of fun to go in there and try to pull them out, and you can't because they're frozen to the wood. So, I mean, that's fun. Yeah, okay. Big entertainment deal for me. But pull it out, put foam in there.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Jonna in Omaha. Hi, Jonna.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it's a little bit twofold. I have a standard split entry house, ranch track type thing, built in the 70s. Space over the garage cantilevers out, and then it cantilevers along the back side of the house.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Garage is uninsulated, cold air return down the middle. I'm thinking about having someone do the expanding foam in that to make that part of the house warm. Where the problem comes in is some brilliant builder ran the plumbing pipes on the outside of the foundation wall in the cantilevered space. So my kitchen pipes freeze.
Okay.
And I've had a plumber tell me the heat tape probably won't work because there's such a small exposed area of pipe under the sink. I put holes in my shop wall, which is basically under the sink area, and the plumber came and said, well, you were off by two joists, so now I have four holes in the ceiling of my shop, finished, ceiling.
Okay.
And that worked until it got down to about 5 degrees. And I'm really, one of these days my pipes are going to blow and it's going to be really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we sided the house, and I know it's no problem to pop off that soffit on the cantilevered part. But what do I do? I know I need to insulate on the cold side of the pipe.
What should you, yeah.
How do I get warm air in there and then still try to insulate, from the foundation wall toward, the other part of the house?
Cantilevers are always, a real tough animal to handle, because specifically on those houses that were built that way back in the 70s. And the thing is, you're going to that cantilevers now have to be completely full of insulation. They have to be airtight and completely full of insulation, and they should really never have any plumbing in them anyway. But I know that if you're just going to have to kind of bite the bullet and maybe do a little bit more tearing the area down so you can get real good access. And without me being right there, I can't really visualize it. So I would try to get that plumber to finally to figure out a way to reroute everything so it's on the warm side, but that of all that insulation. And the thing is, like I said, the cantilevers have to be full. So they're either going to have to be full of I would either use like spray foam, closed cell foam, or cellulose. But they're going to have. But the biggest thing is it has to be airtight. So that plumber may want it may become more extensive for you to do this right. You're probably going to have to run some lines and run them in different areas. It was done improperly the first time, and now it's going to have to be done right.
All right. Good luck with that, Jonna. Let's go next to Dan in Coralville. Hi, Dan.
Hi. You talked about freezing pipes coming in, and I'm interested in freezing sewer pipe going out. Either the water's backing up in the basement drain, and I just wondered if it could be frozen or if it's probably needs augering out.
Is it? Do you know how deep that sewer line is, or are you connected to a city sewer?
Yeah.
I would get the city first to take a look at it. Maybe something out in the street. Is it recurring?
Yeah.
How old is the house?
Oh, about 40 years.
Okay, then, yeah.
It's a full basement, and the water's backing up in the basement drain.
Okay, you got, yeah, I would have, well, you really shouldn't have an issue with freezing. You You may want to have a plumber come out and they can scope it. They'll run a camera down and see what's going on. And sometimes what happens, we have so much clay in Iowa, is the clay sometimes will kind of really compact around pipe. And then when you get freeze and thaw on it, it may move a joint, let's say, in your line. The frost maybe have broken the line or misaligned it now. And the only way you're going to be able to tell is to, run a camera down. So that would probably be the first thing that I would do, is have a plumber do that. And then, because then if he can go all the way out to the street and there's no issue, then it's something that the city's going to have to take a look at.
All right.
That always works the best, to have them scope it so you can see what's going on.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. Let's try to squeeze one more in. Bob in Cedar Falls. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to touch bases on, you're talking about the insulation in the crawl space, or where the joists are right on top of the concrete.
Yes.
I'd be a little concerned about putting any spray foam or anything in there, because it's going to tend to seal off and hold moisture in those joists.
Well, what it does is what you need to do is you need to have something that is sealed, so that when warm air can't get past the insulation and then it gets trapped. Let's say if it was fiberglass bats, the warm air goes through the fiberglass bat like it's a filter. And then the fiberglass does the job it's supposed to. It actually keeps then that board on the outside cold, and that's when we get condensation.
These are sitting right on the concrete where they'd be able to, you can't seal them all the way around. That's where I would be concerned about it, I guess. I just wanted to make that comment. I'd really research that pretty myself.
Well,
over doing
and that's what I have done. That's all I do, is this kind of stuff. And so the best way to, you can look it up on Building Science Corporation, Oak Ridge National Labs, and the best thing to do is to seal that. You don't want any air blowing across it. That's just not the building practice for today. I'm sorry.
All right. And we have two people who want to ask this question quickly, and I don't know if you have an easy answer, but what do you do to keep septic lines from freezing, Bill?
Well, septic lines, then, if they're freezing, then you better call the person out that put them in, because they were installed improperly. They had
to
be
at
the proper
depth. Enough.
Yeah, not deep enough. Or you don't have enough cover over the top. In some areas, you have to, if there's not enough snow, is you do have to cover the tops with straw or insulation. So it depends on what type of system, especially if you have a mound system. A lot of times, if you don't have enough water going in there, a very little use, you'll have not enough heat generated, and so then you will have to insulate over the top.
All right.
So that's something you're going to have to check with your installer.
All right, and then maybe spring will come at some point.
We hope so.
Solve some of these problems. Do you have any promises for us on that, Bill?
Well, I hope we get more snow for the snowmobiles. That's all the promises I want.
All right, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, he comes by once a month. Next month, we're going to talk about deconstruction.
Yes, that's going to be great.
All right. Thank you so much joining us. And with me in the studio now is Ben Kiefer, who's the host of River to River, coming up today at noon. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Charity. I'm intrigued. Deconstruction, does that mean demolishing?
It means, yes, demolition. Harvesting is what it is, wood harvesting.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. It's Charity, but brief distraction, sorry. We're going to talk about education and poverty, the connection between the two in our state. Jumping off point being the poverty rate of black Iowans being three times that of white Iowans. And for Hispanics, it's twice the poverty rate of whites. So we're going to talk with a few guests, including the superintendent of the Iowa City Community School District, Steve Murley, to ask what are the challenges within a school district for remedying these disparities so that kids have these ladders of opportunity to climb from poverty into the middle class.
All right. Sounds fascinating. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Thanks, Charity.
Ben Kiefer, that's River to River, coming up today at noon. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can get in touch with us anytime. We love to hear your reaction to things you've heard on the show. We love to hear your ideas for things you'd like to hear on the show in the future. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. Coming up on tomorrow's show, I'll talk with Marion Matthews Clark about her new book, 60-Something and Flying Solo, A Retiree Sorts It Out in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.